The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast.
Dr. Taz. Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the show. I am thrilled today to talk about a really important subject, friendship. You know, we all get super busy and sometimes we let our nearest and dearest friendships go, or we forget about them, or often it becomes last on the list. Well, I've got two guests today who are telling us to make friendships a priority. Friendships matter. Joining me today are Dr. Wendy Rappaport and Dr. Sandy Bernstein. I'm going to call them Dr. Wendy and Dr. Sandy. And they're here today to talk to us about friendship. But let me tell you a little bit about them. Dr. Sandy is a psychoanalyst at New York City, and Dr. Wendy is a health psychologist at the University of Miami Medical School and also in the Diabetes Research Institute. They've written a book called Friendship Matters. They are actually friends themselves for over 50 years and have been consultants to each other in their practice as well as psychologists. All right, guys, let's break it down. Why should we even talk about friendship, and how in the world did the two of you become friends to begin with?
Oh, a big question.
This is 50 years. This is amazing. So, yes, we want to know.
We look good.
You do look good. I'm looking at your pictures. You guys look amazing.
And they're old pictures, but we look good, and we also feel good. That's probably why we look good.
It's all connected.
It is. I think we're going to... The reason for our book and the reason for our friendship is good for you. In these days of, we lead stressful lives as you began, we're always busy, but this is right, all the research shows us that friendship is good for our health, for our longevity, for our happiness. We need to prioritize it as high on our list as being good at what we eat and good at going to gym and good at doing meditating. Friendship is really a critical part of life. And Wendy and I have been lucky to have shared that friendship for almost 50 years.
I mean, I think that's beautiful. How did you guys meet to begin with?
Was it at a bar, Sandy?
It's always at a bar. Oh my goodness.
There's stories that the two of us keep secret and the stories that are for public. So tell the public story.
Oh my gosh. I want the other one. So, yeah.
After hours.
Got it.
You know, when I met Sandy, she was pregnant. We met because of our husbands. We're friends first. So that doesn't always happen when a love affair and a friendship, you know, really blossom. And
right.
Something happened. I mean, she was pregnant. I talked to her for 5 minutes. We went to the bathroom and we kept talking. Why, you know how normally you have privacy and you'd stop talking. You'd close the door and you'd just be
right.
Quiet and do your own thing. And we just kept talking, and I feel like we kept talking since then.
And
interestingly is that we have never lived in the same place other than a year or two in the very beginning. And we prioritize. We speak on the phone every Tuesday morning. In fact, okay, you know, we already did it.
That's right. That's right.
And that nothing.
Well,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what do you think has held the two of you together? Is it making friendship a priority? Is it common values? You know, I think, you know, I'm talking to you guys at a time when many of us are quite frankly lost in terms of community or identity, or feel a little bit, you know, just unhinged, so to speak, because the classic versions of community, I think, are starting to fall apart. You know, we don't really truly have neighborhoods. We don't really truly all fit into a particular religion. We don't really truly all fit into an ethnic or racial group. And so what has bonded the two of you over 50 years? What do you think the strongest bond has been?
I think it's your point is the prioritizing and the practice. And so it's interesting. We've never, as you say, lived in the same neighborhood, but we've made a point to talk on the phone, you know, in a regular way. Nothing can come ahead of that. And we also meet twice a year. You know, we used to meet at professional meetings, but now we don't always do that. So we just make sure we meet. And my husband will always say, I can't believe you have that much to say to each other. You're still talking. Can't you go to bed now? So part of it is for us, you know, I guess we've centered around a common thing, which has been, as psychologists, that's always been, you know, an interesting connection for us. So I think you're right that people have to be very specific about how they reach out to friends to find an interest. But in the end, you know, no matter what you're talking about, the fact that you're talking and talking about how you talk to other people is always a part of what a really good friend does for you. If you know, it's a good habit to have this really good friend. And, you know, if you have friends who are overweight, you'll tend to be overweight. If you have friends who don't exercise, you'll tend not to exercise. So bringing the good health benefits along with a friendship is so important in friendship.
That's so true. And do you feel like over the years, over your 50 years, as you've watched both men and women, we don't want to limit this just to women, but do you feel like the art of a good friend or the art of friendship is dying? Do you feel like that's getting kind of thrown to the wayside?
You know, we were just talking about the issue of whether younger people have a different experience, kind of what you were saying, kind of a different experience of people in there for the long haul. Maybe they've lived in families that there's been fathers and then stepfathers or single mothers. And so there hasn't been long-term relationships as much as in the past. And maybe in their workplace, they haven't had as much experience. People aren't lasting 25 years and getting gold watches. They move on. And so I do think that part of what we're fortunate is that we really know what it's like to be in it for the long haul. We have that experience in our past. We want to remind people, younger people too, it's so worth it to invest in the long haul, to invest in friends that are going to be with you. Through hard times as well as good times. It's good to have a friend to have fun with. Wendy and I have great times together. But it's really good in difficult times not to feel alone. And that goes back to what you were saying about as communities breaking down and belonging is left to be found, working hard to prioritize friendship becomes all the more urgent.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, it's almost funny. Like, I feel like, in fact, I was doing an article for something, and I feel like the more digitally aware we become and the more digitally adept we become, we long for relationship more. And for you, for the two of you who've been in essentially a friendship and in a relationship for 50 years, what can you tell, you know, all of us and, you know, even my children maybe, about what is the gift of the long haul? What is it that you glean when you stick with somebody for such a long period of time? What is the richness that you guys have found that you wouldn't find if you simply, you know, went to coffee with somebody every now and then in your neighborhood and then never talked to them again 5 years later or something like that? What's the difference? What is it that we can take from the experience and the friendship that you guys have had?
Well, you know, one of the things that you're saying, like with social media, people, you know, I hear this quote, compare and despair. You know, they get on and they do that. But the truly, the friendships that work in life and with teenagers they show are not the ones that are competitive with status, but are competitive with who's kinder, gentler, more interested, and helping other people. So it's including those things in friendship. Those are deep things. Those are characteristics that make people successful in the present and also later on. In fact, I was listening to something that the person who took over after Bill Gates, they say his best thing is empathy. You know, that he really uses empathy as a key to running his company. First of all, they understand if you have empathy, you know what product, but it's also with among the employees. So I think for us, we talk a lot about emotional regulation. It's just a skill set we should have as humans, but friends can help us do it better. So what that means is understanding being aware of what your feelings are. And it can be jealousy, and it can be competition, it can be disappointment, but learning how to regulate them. And the way you regulate them as friends is that you sort of take a shower in empathy and think about, why did that person insult you? Why did that person not call you back? Maybe they had a reason. It's not just about you. So I think we think the gift is awareness and regulation of yourself. And
oh my gosh,
down
and that's so needed today. I think emotional regulation is a problem our youth are having. I think it's a problem that even adults are having. I mean, to understand that you have to regulate your response to be able to have friendships and relationships with other people, I think is critical and is becoming a lost art, so to speak. But I think I interrupted one of you, so please go ahead.
Was just wanting to add to that, and that's so important, the self-regulation. But you asked, what are some of the gifts of friendship? And I think there's an incredible gift of being known by somebody who really loves you and accepts you for who you are and knows you, and so you can be really yourself with that person. And a true deep friendship can offer those benefits. And I don't know how many people come to recognize the power of that experience. but it's really powerful.
Yes,
that is amazing. Definitely, and that's amazing. So how do you maintain a friendship? How do you be a good friend? What would you recommend for busy women, busy men running around? You know, my sweet husband devotes all his time to us. He doesn't make time for his friends. What would you tell people like that? How do they prioritize, like you're saying? What can they do to foster and develop friendships?
Well, you know, one of the things is being conscious. I mean, I love your assessment. You just named it. That's a skill also in friendship. Or, you know, and by the way, the friendship skills are the same ones we need in relationships, you know, with children or as a doctor in your case, or as a spouse, you know, or a partner, you know, being able to name what you feel. So, hey, there's a goal already that you could set up, you know, like role modeling to see your husband be a friend to your children and to yourself. It gives you permission as well. And so, you know, we went through we had a concept that to be open-minded and open-hearted, that's what the friendship attitude is. And we ended up talking about A through G. And if we had time, we would have added H, which would have been humor, because that's a facilitating skill set. You know, we can take criticism a little bit better when we add humor to it. And so what we did was the H through G is don't make assumptions unless you're going to be really, really positive in your assumption. Oh, that's all right. He had a hard time. That's why he didn't come through for me. But I'll give him a call later about it. You know, having good boundaries, learning to give and get criticism, knowing and accepting the differences between us. Having empathy, forgiveness, and then gratitude. That's like a roll off your tongue for every interaction that you're annoyed at. Sandy,
I love it.
Yeah.
And another H, not just humor, which is critical, but going back to your husband and friendship, is habit. Making friendship a habit. That is, like Wendy and I have, as Wendy said earlier, our Tuesday morning time. If people get into, if you schedule, we all know we're so busy. If we schedule something, it's likely going to happen. If I had a trainer and she was coming every morning at 8, I would be ready for her. So
true.
I think making a habit is a really one good way to prioritize making friendship deep and enriching. And as you said, being aware first, labeling it, making a goal, and then making a habit so you don't have to stress about how you're going to make time for the person each week.
Thank you all for listening. I hope you are enjoying our guest today. Now, a quick word from our sponsor. Here's the deal. To truly thrive in all areas of your life, you cannot ignore the importance of good health. I've learned this firsthand, and for many of us, time is our most valuable asset. This is why I love Organifi Green Juice, an organic superfood green juice powder you just add to water to get your greens anytime, anywhere. When you invest in your health, you gain more time because you have more energy and focus to get through your day. The best thing about Organifi Green Juice is that it actually tastes good. Try it for yourself and use the code WHOLEHEALTH at Organifi.com to receive 20% off your order. For everybody out there listening, we are talking about the skill sets and things that are needed in having a great friendship. Dr. Sandy and Dr. Wendy were explaining to me the ABCs, actually it's A through G, maybe even H, of being a good friend. Let's review those for all the listeners out there to make sure they understood them, and hopefully they're jotting them down and taking some notes. So A was don't make assumptions. B is to have good boundaries. I'll let you guys explain the other. C is?
Being able to give and receive criticism, really important to be able to. Wendy's really good at this, being able to frame
give criticism.
Don't you think you are? You're so careful and really you do that really well. Because sometimes we need to tell a friend something that maybe hurt our feelings or was done unintentionally. So knowing how to tell it, also knowing how to be on the receiving end of it. Wendy and I have tested that out with each other many times. So
that can be a friendship breaker right there, right? I mean, I've just had a personal experience, you know, where, you know, a 20-year-old friend and I honestly lost each other over criticism, you know, that maybe wasn't given well or received well either way. But that right there, friendships can break just on that. But knowing to navigate that, I think, is so important, because who wants a fake friend, right? Who wants someone that's not going to be there to be truthful and honest, but at the same time, you have to be willing to receive it and deliver it in the right and appropriate way. I love D, which is a, go ahead.
I was going to say, all might not be lost, because you could skip right over to forgiveness and say, wait a minute, was I too harsh in my criticism? Or, I wonder why I gave it then, giving it some real, you know, emotional literacy. Why did I give it then? Was I feeling bad in my own life that she was doing something so successful? And did I feel jealous? Perhaps that's why I did it. And having forgiveness, if that in fact was it, you know, or vice versa, that's to be why you received it. So with a friend, you can say, you know what, we need to talk because I want to tell you what I know about our friendship. I mean, I think you always start out when you give a criticism about what has worked so well. Like I might say to Sandy, if I'm giving a criticism, you know, Sandy, I want to say something to you. Would it be, would this be a good time? So part of it's getting the permission before you give criticism. And the other would be to say, let me tell you what I've always loved about you. I've always felt that I was a priority. You know, lately, I'm not feeling that. That would be a really different criticism than saying, you know, it's all about you. You never call anymore. You know, since you got that promotion, you blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? So that's a skill set right there in how to give criticism. And in terms of getting it, you know, you have to hear it in the same way. Maybe the person's just having a bad day and that's why you're getting it.
Absolutely. I agree. And as we're running through these too, I'm thinking what you originally said, you know, being a great friend and having a 50-year-old friendship is a lot about showering yourself in empathy. And a lot of this is essentially about empathy. Like, don't make assumptions. Uh-huh. Try to, you know, empathize with what may be happening on the other end. Learn to have boundaries. Learn to give and get criticism. But that's still shrouded and covered in empathy, essentially. Appreciate differences. You know, have forgiveness. All of these things. And then gratitude for time together and time well spent. So I think these are all things that we very quickly can be reactive to, like, oh, they didn't call, so I'm not calling them, or they didn't invite me, so I'm not going to invite them. And we start keeping scorecards, and over time you end up losing people when you continue to keep those scorecards. So I love this. I think this is so valuable to have. And is this essentially what develops emotional literacy? Is this essentially how you would describe it with these A through H skills?
Sandy?
No, you can go first. I'm thinking what I want to add, but go ahead first.
True friends.
Well, you know,
I love it.
So, and of course, the difference between Sandy and I is that I'm always quick, and she's always correct and thoughtful. So I could be more.
You gotta have a dynamic like that. I love it.
So I actually just interrupt. We do one of the things that you just said about appreciating differences. And not just tolerating, but appreciating. I think that's one of the things writing the book has done for the two of us. We really didn't realize how different we were. And not only did we observe it, but we really came to appreciate. I love how Wendy's so much more persistent than I am, that I could say, oh, she said no. But no, Wendy will say, well, let's try again. And I think I see the ways in which I'm never going to be her, but I could admire and sometimes channel some of who she is to enrich who I am.
That's fantastic. I'm laughing because I have a dear friend who's nothing like me. I am quick and to the point, and she was making fun of me because anytime she wants to reach out to me to do something, I get these very long texts with a lot of explanation and detail to it, and I am typically answering on the fly or the go, so my responses are always yes. No, sure, maybe. And she's like, two pages of text and I get a yes or a no or a maybe. Give me more, please. But we always have a good laugh about it, and we do end up getting together at some point. All right, so that's the skills, emotional literacy, think A through G or A through H about developing friendships. Friendships matter. They're important. They enrich us. They make us who we are. And for everybody out there listening, there is value and gift in the longevity of a friendship. So prioritizing it, making it important in your life is critical. And it's important for health. I mean, that is what community is, and that is what connection is about. So we can change this to a medical conversation as well. But I can tell you that the people that have friends and communities weather life's ups and downs so much better. And it's absolutely reflected in their lab work and in all their chemistry and all the other millions of tests that we run. So this concept is truly, truly connected to your health and how you feel in the world and how you project in the world. Now, all of us have been in this situation. What do we do about the draining friend? Or how do we know when it's time to maybe drop a friend?
Well, you know, I think part of it is naming it, like what you're feeling, and setting boundaries. That would go with the B word, you know, setting boundaries where you say to someone, you know what, I've taken on work where I'm quite busy, and I love being able to be your friend. And then you say, I'm probably not going to take any calls during the day because I'm trying to concentrate. And I don't, you know, and I just got married, so I don't really want to speak until 9 o'clock at the, you know, and I'm setting all these boundaries and I want to say, I'm sorry, but I hope you can live with it because I value so much what it is. Uh-oh, I'm starting to sound like your friend that wrote a whole long thing, but part of it is clarity. And maybe, you know, so I probably would say that to myself and then say, well, what do I really need to say? Hey, I value you. I need to change when I'm available. How does that fit for you? Well, I'm not going to like it. I'm so glad you let me know. But how are you going to live with it? Can you be okay with that? So the draining part, the part of this is, you know, also even as psychologists, as doctors, you know, you realize when you get a patient who's not feeling well and is so depressed, you want to be there for them, but you don't want to go home being depressed for them because they wouldn't want to think they depressed you either. I mean, you know, one of the things that when sometimes patients will say to me, like, was that too heavy? Or are you okay? And I go like, you know what? The joy is that you trust me and you're telling me what's going on for you. Not that I'm taking it on, but that I'm here to hear how you're going to solve it. You know, so that's a boundary thing with friends who are draining to you. You wonder, is it your issue or is it theirs? Sandy?
So again, yeah, I would love to hear what you have to say. But again, the message is not abandon them, right? I mean, again, try to find a workable solution so that you can continue the friendship with them. Am I right?
Exactly. We're not saying never, that a friend is never somebody that is, you can reevaluate and say, she's really not healthy for me. She doesn't really, over time, her relationship doesn't bring anything good to me. But I think part of what we've been emphasizing is, like, if somebody over time has had value to you and you to that person, you really owe it to yourselves to try to work it through. And I think those are, it's really important skill sets in marriages, in relationships with anybody in life. Don't throw it away when there are possible ways that you can take responsibility for your part in it and really try to go forward and repair. I think the idea of repair, not throwing out, but repairing, is really important. You can get past hurts and go forward as long as there is some commitment to one another where you really still value one another.
And that may be the most important lesson at all. I mean, of all that we've talked about today, because I think, you know, again, in sort of fast food culture, digital culture, it's easy to throw things away, right? Be it a friend, you know, a spouse, whatever it is. We throw things away, I think, very quickly because it always seems like there's something better on the other end or the other side. But anything where there's time spent, you know, there needs to be added time spent to repair these relationships, not to simply walk away from them. Do you think friendship is as important for men as it is for women? Do you see any gender differences or gender needs?
I think men and women really are different. I think what friendship looks like for a man might be different from what it looks like for women. And women, I think maybe, you know, we're more easily have access to our emotions in the, not in every specific case, but generally by gender. So what women look for in a friend, there's a lot more emotional communication. But I think men also, you know, you find out if men, older men lose their wives, how quickly they remarry.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Because in some way, having somebody in their lives with them really matters, and they know that it makes them feel better. I don't know that that means they're as good a communicator as on average women tend to be, but the value of having a relationship is equally important.
Wonderful.
And that includes the habits. That includes the habit part, you know, like if you're, you know, that you meet your friend at the gym, or you can go to a basketball game as well, you know, with men, but if you are exercising and eating healthy at a lunch out, you know, that's also a helpful thing for friendship. And I think young men are different than they were in the old days. I think men are much more in tune. Young men are much more in tune with feelings. They become partners really in parenting differently than the old days. So I think they need to learn those skills early on, the frustrations and the joy. So I think they're becoming more similar to women in those ways. Just becoming a parent makes you more similar. And by the way, women who, mothers, who have friends are happier than mothers who don't have friends. There's some very specific research in that. And there's also very specific research in that obesity, you know, well, we know about the obesity. I mean, Sandy already said this, you know, that it's as, loneliness is as much a risk factor as obesity or smoking or lack of exercise. So, you know, putting it that, and I, as a health psychologist working in diabetes, the moment I get a new patient, I assign them to a buddy or a mentor. I do it for mm-hmm. both of them. The person who's had diabetes for a while realizes all of a sudden that they really have handled so much from the time they got diagnosed. And they love the altruism, the doing for others. That's the friendship part, you know. And then, so I assign friendship, even in my work, you know, you must have a friend. You get diabetes, you must have a friend.
I mean, I think this is all such valuable advice. You know, I'm motivated now personally to really spend a little bit more time in my friendships. They do sometimes fall by the wayside, given a lot of other things that I have going on, including children and husband and everything else. I hope everybody else out there who's listening today is equally inspired to recover and repair friendships and help move them forward so that we can all get this gift of longevity where we learn empathy, we learn emotional literacy, we learn to navigate together the many different skills we need just to be better people, quite honestly. How do you think, or how would you say, I think this is more of the question, I mean, I meet a lot of people like you're describing who are lonely and may need a buddy or a mentor, or people that are just transient, they're shifting places and you guys are not in the same place, but for some people, how would they as an adult now make friends? I hear that all the time, like, you know, I don't have a college community, I don't have a school community, I don't have a religious community. How does somebody go about the process of building and maintaining friendships? Is there any advice you would give that person who's just like, well, I don't even know where to start? So any advice that you've seen work over the years?
One of the things I think is the altruism. Reach out, you know, whether you meet a soup kitchen or even if you're not religious or spiritual, if you find something, like whether it's the soup kitchen in the church, you know, or
I love that.
a political party, anything that you're doing that's helping others, you'll find other people who are interested in helping others. That's always a great bond.
Yes, Sandy, you think it goes back to where you began about the breaking down of community and belonging, places to belong. So it does, I appreciate that it takes a lot more effort to find those organizations, institutions, places where you can find potentially someone. And I guess all I would say is don't give up. It's so important. You know, our book is called Friendship Matters. It really matters. You know, so as Wendy said, do the soup kitchen. Find someplace to belong that you might not have considered before. But the potential for finding friendship there is greater than sitting by yourself and being on your iPhone.
Again, for everybody listening, I hope you're getting as much out of this as I am personally. I mean, I think they couldn't have said it better. When we're trying to make friends, and they, both of you, Dr. Wendy and Dr. Sandy, actually started the conversation this way, talking about how one of the things a good friendship does is teaches you kindness, sincerity, forgiveness, compassion, empathy, all these great skills that just honestly make us better people. And they are not often grounded in competition and jealousy and status symbols and stuff like that. So for anybody out there searching to build a community or to find friends, begin with those basic principles. Join something where those principles are embodied, and volunteer work, anything altruistic is a great safe place versus places that are sort of swathed in status and financial marks and all that other stuff. So soup kitchens, you know, helping refugees, you know, whatever it is that is your particular passion, find it and do it. And you never know who you're going to meet along the way who's like-minded. Guys, this has been such a treat and so much fun. Friendship Matters. You've reminded me, hopefully we've reminded all my listeners as well. Where can we find you and your book and everything in between? What's the best place for the listeners to go?
It's on Amazon. So, and we are on Facebook page, but you can buy the book on Amazon.
The book is Friendship Matters, and it's available on Amazon. And then the Facebook page, what's the name of the page as well?
Sandy, do you remember which is Friendship Matters?
No, I think it's Friendship Matters Book.
Friendship Matters Book. So that's the Facebook page. And a reminder to everybody, keep your friends. foster your friendships, repair any friendships that might be broken, get emotional literacy, read the book. And guys, thank you so much for joining us. I can just speak medically again. This stuff matters. It changes your numbers. It changes your lab values. It keeps you free of disease. It keeps you your healthiest self. So find your friends and hold on to them. Any parting words for our listeners?
You know, one thought is that, you know, as a psychologist, my thought is the integrative medicine, that when a person gets an illness, that having a psychologist should be part of your team. And as you can see, I refer out immediately to friends being part of the team. But I do think that sometimes when you are stuck in these situations, at least a short course in therapy is helpful to say, because you know what? Your therapist is like a reviewing the good mother aspect, somebody who will be there for you. And of course, that's what I get from my friendship with Sandy. You know, she is so my good mother. She knows all about me, and she likes me anyway. And
loves you anyway.
And loves me anyway. Sometimes bows down to me anyway on a really good day. But, you know, that's, so sometimes therapy is a helpful aspect to kind of practice trusting, really liking yourself enough to offer yourself out to friendships as well. So I think that's,
so true.
You know, yeah, just a helpful thing when you're stuck.
Well, fantastic. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate
you
both so much.
It's
I hope
been
everyone's
a pleasure.
Reminded. I know, this is fun. I hope everyone's reminded to make friends, hold on to friends, and be the best friend you can be and make it a habit. Thanks again for listening, everyone. This has been an awesome episode of the show, and hopefully we'll bring Dr. Wendy and Dr. Sandy back at some time. Have a great day.